This episode of Strange Harbor originally aired June of 2017.
This is Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Strange Harbor, online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor, be strange.
And another exciting edition of Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird,
the strange, the wonderful, anything that's out of the ordinary, paranormal, on this planet or in this universe.
You know, I gotta say something, though. Every week you say the wonderful. Some people that have been abducted by aliens might not think that was a wonderful thing that happened to them when they were probed.
Well, that's why it's strange and different. Not everything is wonderful. I thought my near-death experience was wonderful, you know, and maybe other people wouldn't see it that way, but I saw it as a wonderful event.
Yeah.
Even though I had to get blown up and shot to have that experience.
I wonder if someone else would have had that exact same thing happen, if they would experience the same thing you did.
Similar. You know, they've done research on this worldwide, and people from all over the world have had similar experiences, and some not even actually near death. In other words, they weren't actually dying or in a near-death state physically, but they still had these experiences. And that's the characteristics of the near-death experience are the dark tunnel and the white light are the two primary ones. But then there's some other secondary ones, like life reviews and that kind of thing.
Ooh. See, that's what I wouldn't be looking forward to, is a life review.
You don't want to have your life reviewed? You don't want to go through it all again?
No, I've not made the greatest choices in my life, and
nobody does. I've never met anybody who lived the perfect life and made all the right choices in life. You know, everybody screws up and makes mistakes, and you know, and that's how we learn. That's how we grow.
Judging by my record,
police record.
Yeah. Anyway, that's another story. All that's right. Another show. So I like to watch Ancient Aliens, right?
Yeah.
And the latest one that I've seen, you know, they're all repeats nowadays, it seems like, anyway, but was one on the moon. And I thought it was interesting, you know, just about this whole thing, not just the moon, but just life. This couldn't be an accident. This couldn't be a Big Bang accident. I mean, maybe a Big Bang happened, but it just seems like way too many things are perfect for this to be not a plan, or not, things are just too complex and too perfect to be an accident. That's what I think.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah, I believe that.
For example,
I'm all over that.
Our moon, right, is the exact size to cover our sun when it goes in front of it. Does that make sense?
Well,
you notice that our moon goes exactly over the size of the sun, and the difference in distances and things, how it fits perfectly over it. But that's just one thing.
Yeah.
The other moons of other planets, nothing like that. We crashed that rocket into it, and it rung like a bell for like 20 minutes. And then we deliberately did it again with a bigger rocket, and it rung like a bell for like 2 hours. The substances on the moon are made of things not of the Earth, not that that would have to be. Determined the age of the moon is older than our solar system. I thought that was just interesting. Do you see in the headlines where UFO hunters spotted weird orb while they were lost in the hills? This was in Boston.
Oh, I think I saw something about that, but I didn't read the article.
Now, if you remember, according to Dr. Matthew Johnson, those orbs are actually Sasquatch, and they're in orb form.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So maybe they saw orb Sasquatch.
Well, and the orbs have been around for a long time. I mean, they've been talked about in a lot of different myth and folklore and such. And people have seen them even in modern times now. So, yeah, that...
A lot of orbs in photography. Now, do you think those are just glitches in light or lens, or do you think those are really captured images of orbs?
I think some of them are real, and I think some of them are, you know, a speck of dust on a camera lens, if the light hits it just right, can create a reflection, you know, or a tiny drop of water on a lens. But usually you can tell the difference between that kind of anomaly in a photo and something that's more real. Especially, I mean, there are photographs of the same orb in different positions within the photo, which means that it can't be something on the lens if it changes position within the photo. Even if the camera is moved, the anomaly would be in the same position, the same relative place on the photo, if it were on the lens. But if you take multiple photos of the same thing and it's in different positions, then that's much more difficult to fake, and it's probably not dirt on the lens or anything like that.
Now, some cultures believe that if you take their picture, it's going to steal their soul or something.
That's
true. There's superstitions.
There are, yeah. There are some Native American cultures or even some early European cultures that believe that. There's probably something to that, because your soul, your spirit, is energy. And when you take a picture of something, it basically captures the light, which is energy, and your spirit is light energy. It's the same kind of energy that creates light. So I mean there's definitely some, I think there's some valid points behind that of losing your soul to the to a photograph, but probably just a small piece of it, very tiny piece of it, and we have lots to give away, so there's lots of energy out there.
I was trying to set you up for superstitions.
Well, you didn't
follow me.
I didn't follow your lead. How about we talk about some superstitions? What is a superstition?
A belief system?
Yeah, it's something that people believe that if you do a certain thing or behave a certain way or retain a certain item, that it will have an effect on you. It may bring you luck, maybe good luck, bad luck. A superstition can be just something very simple, or it could be something complicated. Baseball players are very superstitious. If a guy hits a home run, he might not change his socks, you know, for for a week, trying to keep that mojo going.
Yeah,
you know, there was a pitcher in baseball once who wore the same cap every time he pitched, because that was the cap he was wearing when he had a really good outing, so he thought that cap was bringing him luck. And maybe it was, because he continued to pitch quite well. And it had all these sweat stains all over it. It was dirty. You know, they don't like that in professional baseball. They like everything to be clean and neat. You know, they don't call it the show for nothing. But those are superstitions. People believe that certain objects or behaviors will bring a certain energy to them. And I think there's some validity to that, because everything is about energy. It's about the energy we attract. If you're a negative person, you attract negative energy. If you're a positive person, you attract positive energy. So, but people aren't always positive, and they're not always negative. So at different times, we attract different energies. If you put all of your effort into projecting or attracting positive energy, good things will come your way. So it's a matter of how much this superstition or this object or this behavior helps you to develop that positive energy that makes things happen.
Okay.
So I have a couple here that we can discuss, like acorns. An acorn should be carried to bring luck and ensure long life. So if you carried around an acorn in your pocket day after day, it's said to bring luck and long life. So that's a superstition. That's something that people believe in. I wouldn't even know where to get an acorn today, but because I don't know if we have too many, you know, oak trees that produce acorns around here.
Not around here.
No. Amber. Amber beads worn as a necklace can protect against illness or cure colds. Now, there might be something to that.
Amber?
Amber. Amber is it's a rock. It's actually a resin.
Okay.
It's a hardened resin. A lot of times, if you find a piece of amber, it may have an insect or something embedded in it, because when the amber was in a resin form, the insect may have landed on it, and then the resin hardened, and the insect was trapped.
Like
the
mosquito
resin
in Jurassic Park.
Exactly, exactly. Okay. Same kind of thing.
Okay.
And they found all kinds of fossils in amber. And because amber originally starts as a resin, a semi-liquid, it has a certain vibration, and as it solidifies, those vibrations change. And if those vibrations match up with your own personal vibrations, it could bring luck.
Okay.
See, there's some kind of fact or science behind most of these things that happen. Strange things. We talk about all these strange things that happen. But when you stop and you analyze them, there's something valid there. There's some fact, some reality that backs it up. So even though the strange things that we talk about seem maybe even unlikely or highly unusual, there's some validity to it. What do you think about that?
I agree. I agree. Do you have any other superstitions?
Come
on, let's hear them.
There's a few. I think we'll talk about some of these things throughout some of our shows in the future. Fingernails. It's bad luck to cut your fingernails on Friday or Sunday. The fingernail cuttings should be saved, burned, or buried.
Really?
Yeah.
Not just thrown off your back deck?
Not just thrown off. This is a superstition that you should, when you cut your fingernails, the cuttings should either be saved or burned or buried. And that brings luck to you. And you shouldn't cut your fingernails on a Friday or a Sunday, because that's bad luck. I don't know why, but that's the superstition. That's the belief.
When was the last time you trimmed your nails?
Sunday. No, I think it was Saturday, so I was in luck.
You were safe.
I was safe, but I didn't burn or bury or keep my cuttings. I threw them in the trash.
There's one that people practice quite often, and many don't realize it, is when you're cooking in the kitchen, you're using salt, and you throw a pinch of salt over your shoulder.
Yeah.
Do you know where that came from by chance?
I don't know where that came from,
probably from the ancient Egyptians. Everything came from the ancient Egyptians or the Sumerians.
That's possible.
You know?
That's possible. if you spill the salt, then you have to, as I remember, the old superstition was that you had to take a pinch of salt and throw it over your left shoulder.
Hmm.
And that would, it was bad luck to spill the salt, but you could undo the bad luck by taking a pinch and throwing it over your left shoulder.
Does it say anything about spilling juice or milk? Because my daughters do that like 6 times a day. They will spill their juice, their milk, their water, anything in a cup, they're going to spill it. They're going to knock it over. Sorry, it was an accident. Nothing like that? Just spilling salt?
Just salt. Okay. There are other things, I suppose, that spills that might be. According to my my compendium of superstitions,
mm-hmm.
salt. Bad luck will follow the spilling of salt unless a pinch is thrown over the left shoulder into the face of the devil waiting there. So this is about...
the devil.
The devil, and the devil doing it. So it probably came from someplace like Puritan America when people came to America. Or it may have come even from the British puritanical groups, or even before they came to the U.S. That would be my guess. I don't know for sure. But it also says that you can put salt on a doorstep of a new house and no evil can enter.
Mm.
It also says that salty soup is a sign that the cook is in love.
Ooh.
So if your wife oversalts the soup, it's either you or somebody else.
Yeah.
Dead air.
How about this headline? KFC launches chicken sandwich into space next week.
Wow. Now, how are they going to do that? Is it going up on SpaceX?
Oh, boy. I guess we're going to try to get the rest of the universe obese like us, right?
That's right. Get them hooked on fast food. Then they have to come to America to get it. We'll be overflowing with aliens of the extraterrestrial type.
You know, if we fire off a KFC chicken sandwich into space and ETs do get it, are they going to take that as like an insult or we're trying to harm them?
Yeah, you're sending them poison.
Hmm.
Chemical-laden chickens.
So maybe that's not such a good idea.
Probably not. I would imagine, too, that it would lose some of its appeal after it's been in space for a short time.
Hmm. Did we ever talk about the Superhenge?
No, I don't think we did. What's the Superhenge?
Okay, you're familiar with Stonehenge.
Right.
Well, really close to Stonehenge, there's this Superhenge that they discovered. It was buried, and it looks like a crescent hill, but they used, you know, that equipment that you can scan underground and stuff, and they found these huge, up to like 50-ton upright Stonehenge obelisks sticking up into like a half crescent. They theorize it was a full circle,
yeah.
But so far they've only found a crescent, and it's supposed to be older than Stonehenge.
Wow.
It's really, really big. The stones are really huge, and it's just baffling people. It's closer to the Woodhenge than Stonehenge, but still, it's an amazing thing. They have no idea.
You know, Stonehenge is probably one of the most well-known ancient ruins, and it's probably also one of the most well-studied ancient ruins.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, we still don't know exactly why, what its purpose is, why it was built, and how it was built.
Mm-hmm.
And there's speculation, of course, but and it's interesting that the stones line up with the sun on certain days, especially with the solstices. Solstices are very powerful days.
That's just a coincidence.
You think it is?
No. I don't.
But solstices are very powerful because, you know, back before we had television and we were, you know, occupied with computers and cell phones and all that, mm-hmm. we actually paid attention to the planets and their position. And
we didn't have much to do back then.
Well, that's true. on the solstice, during the summer solstice, which is usually right around the 21st of June, and that is the longest day of sunlight mm-hmm. in the year. All those stones line up with the sun, mm-hmm. and the light shines through them in such a way that it lights up certain stones. But they still don't quite understand how they did this, how they engineered such a thing. Mm-hmm. There are other, like in the New Mexico desert, there are old ruins there that line up with the sun on the solstice. And again, it's an engineering feat because these things are huge. And how did they do it? How did they measure where the sun would be on a certain mm-hmm. day?
And I guess some of those huge stones, you couldn't fit a piece of paper through the cracks,
yes.
you know, where they meet, and they still don't know. Our engineers now don't know how to do what they've done. And some have found, what do you call it? Smolder, or, you know, when you weld?
Yeah.
But thousands and thousands of years ago, and they don't know how they did that because there was no signs of them doing that. And that type of technology, I want to say,
yeah.
wasn't around until, you know, thousands and thousands of years later. And there was no record of how the processes that they did to do those things. Does
right.
that make sense?
Yeah, yeah, because the first metal workers were just...
Rosie the Riveter, right?
Yeah. Back in the 40s.
Yeah.
No. But they weren't that long ago.
Mm-hmm.
Metals were worked and used by people just a couple thousand years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they began that by pounding the metal. And then they learned they could heat the metal.
Mm-hmm.
And they learned eventually that they could melt the metals and create different products. But it was an evolution
yeah.
of learning, from pounding to heating to melting. And this took place over, you know, maybe a thousand years or more. So the fact that some of these ancient ruins obviously had technology makes us wonder where that technology came from.
Yeah.
So there's the speculation that the technology was given to us by people from other planets or other solar systems or other universes.
Or the gods.
Or the gods.
And some say the gods are actually aliens.
I'd buy that.
Yeah. Time to take a break. Coming up, more with Johnny and Billy on Strange Harbor.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.
This episode of Strange Harbor originally aired June of 2017.
This is Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Strange Harbor, online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor, be strange.
I believe that the god or the gods mm-hmm. are the energy of the universe. So they consist of energy, and that energy is not, it's not the same for every ball of energy.
Mm-hmm.
So every person has within them energy, but it's different from another person's energy. Some is more evolved than others.
Are you saying your energy is better than mine?
Absolutely. But in the universe, this energy, it actually grows and it lives and it grows up and it evolves just like we do as human beings. So an adult level of energy is different than a child level of energy. And I'm not talking about a human child, but a spiritual child.
Mm-hmm.
So that spirit that we call the soul or whatever is just energy. It's energy of the universe. But that energy comes together to create essentially a living being. Mm. Not a flesh and blood living being, but a spirit being, an energy being. And they're generally beings of light, orbs of light. So
orbs.
Orbs again.
Orbs.
So the orb pattern is repeated throughout the universe. The planets, the stars, the sun, the motion of the planets, the stars, the sun, and from a spiritual perspective, the part that we can't see, the energy, also forms orbs. When I had my near-death experience and I met my grandfather on the other side.
Mm. Was he an orb?
He was an orb. He was a ball of light, light energy. What was really interesting was that once I crossed into the light, I too was a ball of energy, of light, an orb.
Mm-hmm.
And when I saw my grandfather, although he didn't have the physical characteristics that he had on Earth, he was recognizable because of the vibrations of that energy. Those vibrations and that energy that was in his orb was uniquely his, just like mine was uniquely mine. Now, again, when I traveled to the universe through another near-death experience, more recently, and I encountered other orbs of energy.
Were you an orb?
I was an orb.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I met this certain person, the person said, "I'm going to transform us to more human shapes because it will be more comfortable for you. It will be easier for you to converse in that shape." And I thought that was very interesting because I was still kind of connected. I was still connected to my human body. And I eventually had to make a choice to return to my human body or leave. If I left, my human body would die and I would return to the spirit world and be there until I entered another body or I evolved or changed. So these orbs that are essentially spirits or people, the same as people, they're not actual people, exist in the universe. And they not only exist as they entered the universe, but they grow and evolve. Mm-hmm. So when you have the highest level of evolution for a spirit orb, it becomes a god. It becomes a controller of the energy around it. So it, when we talk about God intervening in our life, it's that energy that comes to us, that shares knowledge and information, that can bring things to us.
Mm-hmm.
When I was first kind of getting to know my wife a little more, and we were sharing some of our spiritual energy and our spiritual power, we were at Costco.
Naked.
Not naked.
Kidding.
We did that later.
Oh, but, okay.
we had gone to Costco in Olympia, and the place was packed. I mean, people were driving round and round looking for a place to park. And I said, I can use my energy to get us a place to park right up there by the door, very front parking space.
Mm-hmm.
She said, no, you can't. You can't do that. I said, watch me. So I drove back around the parking lot. And as I pulled up to that front space, there was no car in it. It was empty. I didn't see a car leave it. I didn't see a car. There was a car there when we first started to go around the to come back to that space. But when we got to it, there were still people driving all over the place. There were people searching for parking places. But that space was empty as I pulled up to it. And it was right by the door, so we could just get out and walk in.
And what did she think about that?
She was very impressed, and we talked about the parking lot angels, and we still talk about the parking lot angels. And these are my, they're my special power, this parking lot angel thing. Because when I need a parking space, if we're in Seattle or in a big city and I need a parking space, I call on my parking angels, and a space always comes to me. You know, if we're at a place where I, for those who don't know, that I'm kind of decrepit sometimes, I can't walk very well. But so if I need a place that's closer, a little closer, and there's no handicap space available or something, I can usually call on my parking angels to create a place to park for me. And it rarely fails. And the only time it fails is when I'm distracted and I can't concentrate very well. But
can't focus.
Can't focus. I have to focus my energy to do it.
Okay.
So, and it works with other things, too. I mean, I can, you know, I can't lift heavy objects with my spirit force, but I can move things. I can create energy forces. They're not very strong. And it's something that requires practice. You've got to do it over and over again to become proficient at it. But, you know, like anything else in life, you know, nothing just happens randomly. It requires repetition and practice and muscle knowledge.
Okay.
The reason ball players practice every day is because you have to create muscle memory. And if you don't have that that muscle memory, then you're going to behave differently than you did previously. If professional athletes knew that all they had to do was let go of all their inner thoughts, clear their mind completely, and allow their muscle memory to play for them, they would be much better athletes. Because it's that muscle memory. So if a baseball player, one of the reasons he struggles to hit the ball is not only because it's a difficult task, but because he his body knows how to do it, his brain knows how to do it, but he gets distracted.
He's not in tune with his baseball angels?
And he's not in tune with his baseball angels. So he can't hit the ball as well.
Okay.
But you know, it's the same with anything. It's the same with any kind of event. The more you practice it, the more muscle memory you get. And that muscle memory responds to energy and external forces, so you can be distracted quite easily. You know, it's interesting. It's fascinating. There's an entire science behind that. I think it's called kinesiology. But people study all this stuff, this the energy, and, you know, why does one baseball player hit better than another? Or what, you know, why can one hit home runs and the other one can only get doubles? And they're both about approximately the same strength. But, you know, it's the same thing when you put, there used to be a auto race called the Race of Champions, I believe it was called. And what they did was they took people, race car drivers, and they put them all in identically prepared cars, and then they had to go race. Well, obviously, They didn't all win. They didn't all stay in the same place. They were scattered all over the track because it has to do with the driver's energy and the way he utilizes that energy. So when we utilize our energy in certain ways, we can influence our behaviors and our emotion, everything we do. If you're going to be an athlete and you want to be a really good one, part of it's going to depend on your energy. So if you meditate and you do energy exercises where you learn how to clear your mind and allow your energy to work, you're actually going to be a little better than the guy who doesn't do that. At the same time, you know, we have people are different physically and they respond differently. So we can compensate for that part, for the mechanical things. We have the ability to control this energy ourselves. And people call it God. They say, well, you know, God is intervening in my life. No, you're accessing God or the energy of God, which is the energy of the universe. It's not that God intervenes or looks over you. Every human being has free will. They get to choose what happens to them. And some choose to do things that are socially not good. Some people choose to be avidly religious and believe that God controls their life. But in reality, they control their own life. And they have the power to access this energy of God or this energy of the universe. And that's when God intervenes. But there's no being sitting up in the heavens watching you and trying to intervene to change the course of your life. You have to access that energy on your own. Then that energy can help influence change in your life. If there was a God that can control everything and was benevolent and didn't want us to suffer and wanted us all to prosper and had all that control, we would have no violence in the world. We'd have, everybody would be rich and happy and have everything they wanted or needed because that God would provide it under the belief system that God controls your life.
So you're saying that God doesn't exist?
No, I'm saying that God does exist. What I'm saying is that God isn't watching over you. You are watching over you.
Okay.
And God can't do anything for you unless you access that energy of the universe, which we call God, and which is an advanced spirit. So the source of the energy comes from advanced spirits. Johnny.
Yes?
Did you know that Elvis Presley made only one television commercial in his entire career?
What was it
just
for?
One. It was an ad for Southern Made Donuts. And it ran in 1954. So he was quite a young man then.
Yeah.
And that's the only television commercial or ad that Elvis Presley ever did. You know, modern day actors, you know, even big ones like George Clooney and you know, some of the other big names occasionally do television advertising.
And a lot of them do them over in Asia, like China and Japan.
Right, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, or even over in Europe. So that fact that Elvis only made one TV commercial in his entire career is actually quite interesting, I think.
Yeah.
So, and do you know, George Washington is the only man whose birthday is a legal holiday in every state in the United States.
Really?
Yeah. We celebrate other presidents, but we don't celebrate their birthdays. We celebrate the person. But in George Washington, we celebrate the day of his birth. And he's the only U.S. president who, or actually is the only president who has a legal holiday.
And wasn't a member of a political party.
And wasn't a member of a political party, yes. He was a neutral, which is kind of the way our forefathers created the political system back then.
Okay, speaking of that, conspiracy involving that. Now, there's a rumor going around that when each president leaves the office, he leaves a note for the next incoming president of all these UFO secrets. Like, kind of just says, hey, you're the president.
Oh, yeah.
We have...
The president's book of secrets.
What do you think of that?
You know, in the movie National Treasure, they talk about that. I think it's actually in the second one. The second.
Yeah,
it
was one of them.
They talk about that. But I've heard about this as far back as Eisenhower in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
About this book of secrets where there are things that each president puts in this book, little secrets that get passed on from president to president.
Mm-hmm. You think it exists?
I think it might. Why wouldn't it? I mean, we live in a society of secrets.
Well,
you know, why wouldn't they pass them on?
What I heard, and this was even recently, was... On the desk of the Oval Office is a handwritten note from each president.
Yeah.
One from the other. Not a collection of, like, the Book of Secrets, but from the outgoing to the incoming. No president has ever indulged us as to what their letters said at all. I guess they're asked not to tell anybody or what they share. The conspiracy UFO theorists all say it's UFO stuff.
Right. And the Bigfoot guys say that there's a Bigfoot living in the White House, and no president wants to talk about it.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they got all those bedrooms. They don't use them all.
Yeah.
There must be something living in there.
Well, except for the Lincoln bedroom.
That's true. There's just perverts in there. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So you haven't heard about the note, the handwritten note from one president?
I have not heard about that. I've heard about the Book of Secrets.
Yeah.
Where they... Each president throughout their presidency writes little things in there.
Yeah.
And then it's passed on
to
the next president.
That's really cool, too.
Yeah.
I'd like to get my hands on that.
Wouldn't you like to see that? Yeah.
Like, who killed Kennedy? It's supposed to have, like, that in there and something and some other things.
Yeah. There's some interesting conspiracy theories about the Kennedy assassination. Some of them are pretty wild, but some of them... I think are very plausible.
Yeah.
Like the LBJ, George Bush collusion to kill Kennedy.
They were both president.
People don't realize that George Bush, the first George Bush, H.W. Bush, was...
He was there.
He was there. He was the director of the FBI at the time.
Yeah.
And LBJ was the vice president.
Mm-hmm.
And so when Kennedy was assassinated, Johnson became president.
And LBJ had gotten into a quarrel with JFK recently.
Right.
And I guess
there were rumors
his girlfriend had said he stormed out of that office, said, I'm going to kill him.
Yeah.
But then you have the white supremacist guy who was there, who's caught on tape saying how they were going to do it. Or I don't remember if what I heard was before, if it was pre or post assassination, but it said how they were going to do it and they were going to blame it on a patsy. But then you have the angles of the bullet trajectories, and then one speculated that underground in the water system, the sewer system, there was like a grate where you could have aimed up from underground up where the curb is.
Yeah.
And shoot from that direction, too. And then you're covered by road. And the other end, I think there was a diner on the other end. And you have to kind of look all that stuff up.
Because
throwing bits and pieces out.
If you watch the video of the assassination, which is interesting, I think it's probably the first presidential assassination that we actually have live video and photographs of.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't have that technology before that. So, when you look at the videos, I mean, you can see that the shots came fairly rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
And they came in on a similar trajectory and a similar line. So, If you've ever fired a semi-automatic weapon, you know that trying to put 3 or 4 or 5 rounds in the same place, especially in a moving target, is extraordinarily difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole theory that somebody was shooting from the book depository window with an old rifle.
Old bolt action rifle,
and is putting that many rounds into the same place.
Mm-hmm.
It's not very plausible.
Yeah.
I mean, the sheer physics of it.
They've tried it with professional snipers, and they couldn't do it.
So it either has to be more than one person shooting at the same time, or at relatively same time, or the bullets came from a very highly trained person. So, it's very interesting. It's an interesting theory, and there's been a lot written about it. I've seen a number of video stories about it and presentations of evidence. I've seen some supposedly secretive videos. I don't know how secretive they are.
Are they on YouTube?
Because I had them, yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't. I can't imagine that. You know, I managed to get a hold of some top secret video, but I do. I actually have a video that's about an hour and a half long, I believe, and it talks about the entire conspiracy theory behind the JFK assassination.
There's quite a few believable theories out there.
There are.
And every time I hear a new one that sounds believable, I'm like, oh, okay, that's what happened. And then I'll hear another one that's totally different, but the evidence, looks pretty compelling. Oh, that's how it happened.
Yeah.
I change every time.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, I've seen different ones. I've even seen some of the debunking stuff.
Yeah.
That says, it couldn't possibly have happened, or couldn't have been a conspiracy because of this or that. And that's believable, too.
Yeah.
So it's hard to know.
That'll do it for this edition of Strange Harbor. If you have any input, questions, comments, concerns, conspiracies, sightings, abductions, all that good stuff you'd like to share them with us, just log on to strangeharbor.net.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.